Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we welcome back our mental guru, Dr. Bob Winters, to talk about so many things, including the PGA Show and Flow Focus. So stay tuned and get ready.
All right.
As you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show. So glad you'll be along. This hour, we wanted to talk about the PGA Show upcoming, as well as who we'll see at the show. And this hour's guest is one of said people. He is a regular contributor to this show. He is a mastermind. He is our mental guru. He is Dr. Bob Winters. Doc, thanks for making time to come on the show. We love to have you on, I don't know, once a month or, you know, every 6 weeks or so, whatever fits into your busy schedule. You've been a busy boy, but now we're in the new year, so it is time to go. It is go time.
Keith, you know, welcome to 2026. I'm glad to be with you. And it's going to be, you know, a super year. I just have a feeling everything's positive, good things are happening, and just a lot of great movement, you know, in a lot of new directions. So we've got a lot to talk about.
Did you ever think you'd actually say welcome to 2026?
I got to be honest with you. I really didn't think about it. There was a wonderful show years ago. It was a science fiction show. It was one of my favorites. It was called Logan's Run. And Logan's Run was about people who, you know, when you got to the age, I believe it's either 30 or 35, that you had to renew yourself. And what renew meant, you went on the carousel and you started floating up, and what happened? You got zapped. Okay, so you had like this little life, you know, pocket right in the palm of your hand, and if, you know, and it had like, you know, green light, yellow light, red light. If it started flashing red, and then started flashing clear, that meant, you know, your time, you know, here on this planet was up. So yeah, I mean, I was really influenced by that movie. I didn't know if I was going to make it past the age of 40. So. Think about that. So here we are in 2026 and still doing what I love and hopefully getting better every day at doing what I do.
Yeah, between the two of us doing what we love right there comes together on Tee It Up for Keith Jones. And when we were growing up, we were always fearful that the robots would take over the world. And lo and behold, it is happening. So AI is certainly abounding in a lot of industries, not so much in the golf industry. The only robot we ever had was Iron Byron, which was obviously a hitting robot, so that was okay. But we'll, you know, as AI continues to go, I'm sure the golf industry will do more and more around that. So it is interesting, and people are concerned that it's going to replace jobs and such. And of course, it is. You know, but anyway.
Well, the one thing, you know, that I do, you know, agree with all the prognosticators and predictors and people talk about AI. I think AI will make a really nice contribution to humanity in terms of being able to diagnose medical conditions much more accurately, have, you know, a much more thorough evidence base, and rather than be just one doctor's opinion or one doctor's viewpoint, you know, on, you know, on their patients. So I think if we can get, you know, a little bit, you know, more of a consensus and to be a little bit more accurate. So I think as far as the medical industry and having AI and having them, you know, involved a lot of, you know, the diagnosis, I think that's going to be, you know, much better, you know, for mankind.
But what about the psychologist? And I speak directly to you, the sports psychologist, who can have their player that they normally would go see the psychiatrist or the psychologist, and now they would just go talk to an electronic something that would give them the information that they need.
No, I just think, you know, that's really where, you know, humanity, you know, sort of loses, you know, the compassion, the empathetic awareness, you know, of a human being. And I know they're trying to make, you know, these AI robots, you know, very, very human. And I've been out to Las Vegas. I've been where they have the sphere and where they have, you know, the humanoids, the robots, you know, that are very, their skin is very, you know, it's very human-like. Their expressions, the way, you know, they sort of look at you. I got to tell you, I mean, it's really kind of freaky, really. And, but I just think, you know, that you have to ask yourself, I mean, really, what is it that you're really looking for? You know, for me, I think you could get a lot of great, you know, information from AI. You can, right? But I don't think you really get a person's experience, a person's creativity, their imagination, you know, and what, you know, they would give you maybe, you know, from left field. You know, that's sort of really what I've always tried to do with people. People say, you know, what process do you work on? You know, what are you trying to do? And I could sit here and I could talk all day about self-regulation theories, flow, breathing techniques, different things like that, thought stoppage. But for me, I'm not really that person, really. I like to talk, you know, to a player, a person, a human, and I want to get right to the core. It's almost like peeling an onion. You peel back the layers, you know, one at a time. And just, but let's get to the psychological core. What's really going on with this person? And I know many times that's really what I do. And people go, I never really thought of it like that. Well, I think, you know, when you have AI and they're sitting there, they're completely logical. And I think, you know, some of my very best work, Keith, is between you and me and all, you know, the millions of people that listen to Next on the T, is that sometimes it's okay to not be clear, cold, logical, and to make sense all the time. Sometimes a little bit of spontaneity, a little bit, you know, of being illogical, of just, you know, sort of spitballing some different things out there and just saying, hey, I'm a human being too. I don't know if I really have all the answers, but this is really what I believe to be true from really what you're telling me. So I think people appreciate that as well. I think they appreciate the human being, you know, in me, the compassion, the honesty. And I think that's the whole point. And I love the saying is that no one really cares how much you know until they know that you really care about them. And I think that would be very, very tough to convince someone that this AI humanoid robot really, really has empathy and really cares about you as a flesh and blood human being. I mean, that's just my viewpoint.
Well, that's part of why we're having Dr. Bob Winters on, teed up with Keith Jones, for that viewpoint. You mentioned a term I'm not sure I've heard of before. I probably have experienced it, but I need to delve a little further. And I think you said thought stoppage. What is that?
It's just a very basic, introspective, self-regulatory process where when you know that you are going down the wrong way, the wrong path, when your thoughts are becoming negative, they're becoming self-destructive, you have to sort of catch yourself before you go off of the cliff. You have to tell yourself, stop, stop, you know, I'm headed the wrong way. And so what you do, you interrupt, you know, this pattern of negative tapes, negative rewinds, just bringing back all the trash. And then you say, stop. And then you sort of reframe and reset your focus. And you say, okay, I know that I'm spiraling. I know that I'm on a bogey train. I know that I'm having, you know, a poo-poo, you know, party here and I'm having a pity party. You know, I'm going to change that right now. And so what you do, you stop it, and then you say, okay, what can I actually insert here? Okay, I can do one thing right now. So you reframe, you reset, you insert what I call a very, not just a positive thought. You know, a lot of people say, well, it's just positive thinking. No, it's much more purposeful with much more clear intention. This is what I want to do. This is really the direction I want to go, because the direction I've been heading is the wrong way. So thought stoppage says, hold on, you know, we're turning, you know, this train around and we're headed back this other way, you know, with a more clear and directed focus. That's what thought stoppage is.
Interesting. And it's not surprising. It comes from Dr. Bob Winters. From the standpoint of the thought stoppage from a golf swing, does it work the same way? You're thinking, I should go over here. I want to go this. I want to take this challenge. I want to take on this hazard. And your thought should stop right there, and you should hit the more intelligent shot.
What I'm, you know, listening to you right now, I'm looking here at my pile of rubber bands. I have rubber bands I give to every one of my students, and I don't care if they're a veteran tour player or a new junior, you know, player. These rubber bands are sort of what we call cognitive behavioral awareness devices. You wear them on your wrist. And when you find yourself thinking about score, you find yourself thinking about poor results, you find yourself wallowing and having a pity party, you know, woe is me. I just can't get anything right. I'm getting screwed out here. You know, golf stinks. You know, my swing's pathetic. You've got to be able to say stop. And when you do say that, I have them pull this rubber band and they snap it. And they snap it right now. And then that little snap, you know, sort of jars them a little bit. And it is an awareness tool. I mean, so you have this mental awareness, you have this behavior where you're pulling the rubber band and you snap, all right? But now you're saying, okay, here we go, you know, refocus. So a lot of times, say that you're behind the ball and you're getting ready to swing and you made a couple of not so good rehearsal swings. So you step into the ball knowing that you're not feeling all that solid, all that fluid, all that efficient. You realize you're probably, if you keep going ahead, you're making a really grievous mental and physical error that's just waiting to happen. And the greatest mental mistake that you would make right then is not, you know, is not, you know, it's failing to stop. Hold on. You know, this isn't where I want to go. You need to snap that rubber band, tell yourself, stop, go back behind the ball and get clear. Reset your priorities. What is it that I want to do? So many times players, their mind is just, it's just reeling. Because if you really think about this, Keith, and there's been a lot of new research on this over the past couple of years, about where are all of our thoughts, okay? And I knew this years and years and years ago, because I'd been doing a lot of research, you know, on mind control and the thoughts that we have. And when I first joined the NBC Golf.com team with people like Alex Maselli and people like that, they were really getting it started. I was writing about the number of thoughts that we have in a day, in an hour, in a minute, different things like that. But what, you know, the research has just finally come out to say is that you and I right now, I am talking to you, and I'm talking to you in this moment, moment by moment, right now. This is the present moment. But if you talk maybe sometimes, I might drift or project into the future. And what we find is that most of the time, human beings, 60% of our conscious thought is into the future. And when we project into the future, Keith, you know, that's where anxiety, trepidation, doubt, that's where it lives. You know, what if this happens? Oh, what if that happens? Oh, and we start to have, you know, this worry syndrome. And that's really what worry is. It's an increase in feelings of being vulnerable and a decrease of a sense of personal control.
With Dr. Bob Winters, we'll pick that up and we come back from this break.
Hi, this is Bob Toski, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones. And we'll be right back. I'll keep my pants on.
We're back with Dr. Bob Winters, our mental guru, and worries seeped into our last segment. I don't know how that happened, Doc, but it did. So self-doubt, all those kind of things you don't want to, you don't want to talk about. You want to have a thought stoppage right there.
Well, I always have doubt, you know, when we're coming up to our segment. So I just kind of just keep right on going. Okay, so let me pick up where we talked about. Is that 60% of the time, and when we're, you know, awake, our conscious mind is into the future a lot. And that's really where most of the doubt, most of the trepidation, and the anxiety lives. Now, another part of it, 20% of the time, we're reflecting back into the past about bad stuff that's happened, or we're reliving some you know, sort of traumatic event, or we may be even, you know, reliving some joyous moment. But we're not here in this 20% of what we call flow or present moment focus. And that's why, you know, just, you know, when people say, pay attention to me, if you're in class, you know, and I know many times, you know, I would actually drift off because that's really what my mind would do. I mean, that's what dreamers do. You know, creators, you know, imagineers here at Disney. I mean, they're always sort of projecting into the future, and they're asking themselves, I wonder what, you know, would happen if I did this. You know, so they're always creating. But if you're supposed to be focused and Mrs. Wilson asks you, Keith Jones, look up here, pay attention. So now your attention now goes from the future and it comes right back here to the present moment. And so now you're locked in on what Mrs. Wilson is saying. So there, your focus now is made up of two things, Keith. It's made up of the attention, which is energy, the energy that I'm focusing on for Mrs. Wilson, what she's saying right now. And if you're listening to me right now, any listener, you're now in a 20% of what we call a flow focus. You are here right now. You're nowhere else. But if you start thinking about, you know, I got to take out the trash when I get home, or I had a bad day at work, as you're listening to you and me talk, Keith, now you're floating all around. And that's really what we find, you know, with a lot of golfers, is that, you know, when they step into their golf shot, they aren't really there for that golf shot. They are somewhere else. They are usually into the future or they're into the past.
Wow. Interesting. But I see that because these thoughts creep into your mind when you're looking at the shot, you're getting ready to address the ball, and then other thoughts bleed in as well. So it's very difficult to shut them out.
Well, you know, here's the point. Is that if you understand the whole notion about why we created pre-shot routines many, many years and decades ago, and my great colleague, great friend, Dr. Patrick Cohn, and he and I have collaborated on a lot of books together, The Mental Art of Putting being one, great putting right now, and he's another great sports psychologist here in the Central Florida area. And so Patrick and I, you know, were sort of really going through all this pre-shot routine research. In fact, his dissertation was on the efficacy of pre-performance routines in sports, and particularly golf. And I was sort of his guinea pig back in our, you know, olden days at the University of Virginia with Bob Rotella and Linda Bunker and all of those. And we were talking about the routines. And the whole point about a routine is that it has mental elements. It has physical elements. It has a cognitive component. It has a physical component. And they run parallel, what we call parallel processing with each other. But at the same time, they intertwine, they integrate. So if I'm really thinking about a good shot, I'm seeing my target, I could also, you know, be rehearsing a feel, you know, swinging a feel that matches my visual input. This is the shot I see. And I'll give you a specific example here, Keith. So let's say you're 120 yards from the pin. 120 yards from the pin. Beautiful day, 75 degrees. You have a nice lie. The ball is sitting up. The green is 120 yards, you know, in front of you. The pin is in a relatively easy, what we call, you know, go after it position. There's really no bunkers, you know, or any water hazards around the green. So there's very little wind. What, you know, club would you actually hit that 120 yards?
I would hit my putter. No, I Yeah. It should be a wedge, but I'm never sure. Let me do this, Doc. It's going to take another break for me to come up with an answer for you. So we're with Dr. Bob Winters. He's now put a quiz out there for you, the floaters in the audience. You guys think about this as well. 120-yard shot into a very gettable pin. We'll ask Doc what he would do after this bottom of the hour break.
Hi, this is Annika Sorenstam, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter.
The Lama.
Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
We are back to start this second half hour of the show, spending it with Dr. Bob Winters, our mental guru, a guy always with the questions. He's supposed to have more answers. He's got questions all the time. He's always engaging the brain. That's I know what his MO is. I know what he's doing on the air. So 120 yards in, what would you, Doc, take? You would take,
well, here's the point.
Your sand wedge.
No, this is the point. I would take a pitching wedge, and because I'm, you know, listen, I'm not overly long. I am very accurate. And that's why they call me Dr. Dart. I mean, I hit everything very precise. And I look at my golfing clubs as sort of surgeon's tools. And that's just sort of how I've always played the game my entire life. But 120 yards, I'm going to take a full metal jacket, full swing pitching wedge. Now, I can't, and I think really one of the worst mental mistakes I see so many players do is that they get 115, 120 yards, but their wedge may only go to 110, 115, and they want to try to squeeze out that extra 5 to 10 yards. That, you know, creates a lot of, you know, dangerous situations because now you're trying to hit it too hard. You're probably trying to close down the club face. You're probably going to have a steep, you know, angle of attack on the ball. You probably will lay over the sod or you just miss it the shot. So for me, when we have a wedge, the wedges are meant to be accuracy clubs. I mean, nobody steps up and goes, wow, I'm going to hit a power wedge here. Okay. No one says that. So 120 yard shot for me is a perfect, you know, in my wheelhouse pitching wedge. Now, when I'm actually looking at this shot, before I even take that club 120 yards, I go, okay, that's really my max. If I swing this 85% full and I catch it flush, I'm at 120 yards, exactly. So that's in my wheelhouse. So I see that shot in my mind's eye. That's, you know, my cerebral cortex. That's my brain, you know, really going through, you know, all of, you know, the assessment, all of the estimate, and all the guesstimation that I'm going to do. So then I would make a clear decision, what club do I need to hit that shot? You know, in my bag of experience, my memory bank, that's a pitching wedge. So I'm going to grab that pitching wedge. Now, I see my target, so I want to have this target awareness. But before I step into the ball, I want to actually make some what I call pre-hersal swings. It's not just a rehearsal. It's not a practice swing. It is a pre-hersal swing. And what that means is I'm warming up, you know, my neural fibers in my brain to tell the motor cortex, to tell my body, hey, this is the movement sensation that I want to make in order to swing the most efficient so I can swing this club to hit that ball. So that ball goes on this flight pattern that actually goes the distance and goes to the target that I've actually already calibrated via my visual system, my touch system, and my memory system. Okay. So now I'm behind. I'm going to actually make two pre-hersal swings. Now that's the feel. I'm actually warming up a 120-yard swing from behind the ball. Now, at the same time, as I'm doing that, I'm looking at my target. You know, I'm actually soaking up my target. I'm creating a nice visual memory. And every time I look back at the target, I'm sort of refreshing my computer. we always talk about, you know, refreshing your computer. So you're actually saying, okay, refresh. We're refreshing our target image and our visual memory of where the target is. So now I'm standing behind the ball. You know, I'm now looking at my target, taking a nice breath, just sort of a nice cleansing breath, just to say, okay, I'm set. This is the commitment phase. So now in this routine, and this is really what most golfers do not do at all. And those that do only do it haphazardly. If you did one thing here in 2026, you must commit. I mean, commit as much as you can to your target, to the club you're using, to the feel that you want to hit. But most of all, commit to the idea of, yes, this is what I'm going to do. Because now when you actually have all of that set, Keith, here's what happens. The conscious mind is in a really good place. As I step in to, you know, to aim and align myself to the ball, I'm now trusting my process. I'm trusting my routine. I'm trusting all of this intervention that I've been doing. And so now when I aim the club face, align my body, take, you know, a couple looks at the target, refreshing, you know, my target awareness, spatially, I know exactly where that pin is in free space. It's out there 120 yards. I can bring my eyes back to the ball. And this is huge. This is really what we talk about, cortical inhibition. And then, you know, when we actually get our eyes back to the ball, we now have a clear mind so we can actually initiate the takeaway. And when we initiate the takeaway and our mind's in a good place, we're not consciously thinking about how to swing the club. We already know how to swing the club. And that's really where this automatic harmonic process of the brain comes in. Our brain, the left and right hemispheres, everything is, has nice balance to it. So there's synchrony in the brain. When people are overthinking, you know, their shots, they are probably so left brain oriented, so what we call asynchronous, you know, that there's so much discophony or cacophony going on in the brain that I've got this, so don't go here, don't go there, keep your left arm straight. So we are reinvesting in sort of this motor theory. And instead of actually swinging the club with trust, we're actually coercing the club. So now I can actually swing freely. The ball goes to my target and it goes exactly on the flight line, the trajectory that I actually rehearsed behind the ball maybe 4 or 5 seconds earlier. So that's the whole point about having a great routine. And the final step of this great routine is the ability to finally say to yourself, regardless of what happens, you know, I can accept this shot wherever it goes because my mind was in a great place when I stepped into the shot. And that right there, it's really what Dr. Patrick Cone was talking about in his dissertation, what I was doing with him for years, helping him be his guinea pig and just help me in my career with everything that I was doing, you know, when I was doing my dissertation work. But the whole point of it is, what's the most important part of your routine? Is it the timing? Is it the sequencing? Is it the automaticity? All of those things are important. But the one thing that is most important is that when you step into the shot, do you know what you want to do? And I would say almost to a fault, most golfers, average golfers, golfers who play for fun, most of the time they're playing the game of hit and hope. You know, they step in and they hit it and they hope good things, but they really haven't planned for success via their routine or their intention to hit a good shot.
Fantastic. Fantastic, Doc. Somebody who has planned and planned again and plans to hit a good shot is Brooks Koepka. I want to bring him into the conversation because I know you have many thoughts on the migration from the PGA Tour back to the PGA Tour, but the PGA Tour and their new head is welcoming Brooks Koepka back to the fold. Thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, really, you know, however you think about Brooks Koepka, you know, multiple major champion. He really is. I think he's good for the game. I think he adds a lot of color to the game. He really does. He's a colorful character. He's a competitor. He's you know what I want to call he's a friendly brute, if you will. I mean he really is. He's just something else. And I think he adds just so much color to the game. And I think that's really what the PGA Tour is saying. Hey, we welcome back. And I'm sure they would welcome back, you know, the John Rahms and the Bryson DeChambeaus and the Cameron Smiths and all of those guys on the LIV Tour. I mean, really, if they wanted, because in all fairness, Keith, I mean, golf, you know, as a spectator sport, as an entertainer's, you know, venue, when we don't see the best players, you know, all year, we sort of miss out. We go, well, you know, the best players in the world weren't here. I mean, if you think about where do most people have the biggest, strongest viewership, it's at the Masters, it's at the U.S. Open, it's at the British or the PGA, it's at the majors, because that's really where all of the players from all over the world, the best, are assembled. And I think, you know, when you have some of the best coming back into the PGA Tour, I think it's good for the PGA Tour. Now, I don't know what to say about the LIV Tour, because the LIV Tour, you know, kind of fills a different segment. It fills a different niche, if you will, for the golfing audience. I think it's fun. I think it spreads a lot of great ambassadorship around the world at the different venues. It's just a unique type of format as well. But as far as, you know, bringing Brooks back, I think, you know, that there's going to be a lot of players that are going, yeah, I'm not sure. But I'm sure there's a lot of people that are going, yeah, I think it's probably really good for the tour. I do.
Yeah, I agree with that. It is good for the tour. Bryson and John Rahm will not be coming back to the PGA Tour. They're staying with LIV. We're planning on seeing the LIV event in the May time frame, so that'll be interesting to be back out there. I was amazed last year when we were at an event and how busy it was, how heavy fan attended it was, how busy the merchandise tent was. It was astounding to watch the whole phenomenon that is LIV. But obviously, we'll be in Augusta as well, and the majors are always, you know, good for everybody. And we've cut back travel a little bit from that standpoint, but certainly we'll be in Augusta, and hopefully at the U.S. Open and such. So it is important for a lot of people in and around the game of golf, the spectators and the players, because as you mentioned, I mean, it really comes down to it. No matter what the tours are doing as far as events go, it does come down to those four majors that you mentioned.
Well, yeah, and I think everyone who actually goes to a PGA or even an LPGA Tour event or any type of professional golf event, I think the one thing you really have to admire is the skill set that these performers have. I mean, they do things with, you know, the golf ball that is just absolutely phenomenal. It's amazing. And for someone who's been a professional, has been there at every level of the game, you know, as a player, coach, and researcher, I got to tell you, I mean, the things I'm seeing and how that has sort of trickled down, you know, and I happen to believe that I'm very, very thankful. Someone said the other day, because you're one of the people that's really brought this to the forefront. You're kind of the grandfather of applied sports psychology, bringing it especially to, you know, the masses, the way you have the junior golf schools with the Nike junior golf schools and everything. And you keep making it simple that a lot of these juniors, think about all the juniors you've worked with over the years who've now gone on to college, who've now gone on, you know, to play professional golf. And I just feel, you know, great about that, because, wow, when I look at these kids today. And I remember I was working with a player by the name of Jim Fuller, Jimbo Fuller, played for Penn State University, and who was going out to get his tour card. And my good friend Tom Coyne, who actually had me in his book, Paper Tiger, and Tom was talking about he was following Jimbo Fuller and, you know, at Q School, I think the first or second stage. And he said, this guy is long. And I don't mean he's just long. He's stupid long. Okay, and I think that's really what I see with all these, you know, players today. They are just so unbelievably long, Keith. It's phenomenal. But they're not only just long, but they're good They're very accurate, and their wedge games and the short game. And that is really where, gosh, if people here in 2026 put 70% of their time into 100 yards and in versus spending all their time on the long game, you would probably see your handicap come down 6 or 7 shots. No kidding. I mean, I'm not exaggerating that at all.
No, I totally agree with you, and that's certainly what Bob Toski and Mike Malaska and other instructors talk about on this show as well, is the importance of those games. And it goes back to Dave Pelz. The great departed Dave Pelz made a living out of the short game, 100 yards in. You know, his clinics and his teachings were just phenomenal.
When you take a look at that, and let's talk about, you know, DP. Let's talk about Dave Pelz, his son, Eddie Pelz. You know, I've known them both for years. It was really, where did Dave Pelz really come, you know, to the forefront? I believe it's because it's his work, just not with putting, but it was his work because, you know, I was doing all this putting research work as well. And I was known as Professor Putt. He was known as Dr. Putt. And I was doing a lot on the psychological aspect, and he was doing so much on the technique and the short game technical side. But it was Tom Kite. And Tom Kite and his wife were sitting around one year talking about, gosh, you know, everybody's hitting it so long, and I think I'm losing half a stroke to a stroke on some of these par fives. And he started, you know, kind of, you know, working around, you know, some different things. And I think he met Pelz during that time. But what he did, he put in a third wedge in his bag, because back in the old days, we would have maybe a 48 degree pitching wedge. We would have maybe a 56, sand wedge. And that was really it, right? So we had a pitching wedge and we had a sand wedge. Now, I think Tom Kite went and he put like 47 degrees, something like about a 52 degree, and then about a 57 degree. So he actually sort of put in a third wedge in his bag, and his productivity on the par fives, he became much better. And Tom Kite went on to become, at that time, the tour's all-time leading money winner, because he was winning a lot of events back in the early 90s to mid-90s, Tom Kite was. Because he was just, you know, an ATM. He was just a money machine. But that's really where we put so much emphasis on the short game, the wedges, and then Dave Pelz had his three-wedge system, and then all of his other different wonderful work that he did with putting. So, yeah, I think there's just, you know, a lot, you know, to be said about that.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll see Eddie at the PGA show or not. I know I'm planning on seeing you. We'll talk about that in our next segment. But Eddie's been working with Patrick Reed, so that's been an interesting relationship that they've had. And our interesting relationship is this hour with Dr. Bob Winters, our go-to mental guru. Hopefully you're learning some stuff this hour. We always love this stuff to learn on Tee It Up with Keith Jones. And we'll be back to wrap up the show with Doc and talk about the upcoming PGA show. It is just around the corner. It is fantastic. Bob Toski will be there, and he will be celebrated for 100 years of Toski. We'll talk about that in the upcoming weeks after the show and such. But we'll be back to finish up the show right after this break. Back for our final segment of the show. It's been a pleasure to spend some time with Dr. Bob Winters. And speaking of Dr. Bob's, Dr. Bob Rotella is also scheduled to make an appearance at the PGA show on behalf of Bob Toski. So that'll be a great thing. I talked to Bob earlier this week, and supposedly it's on. Dennis Satisher has pulled it off, and we will let you know how that goes. It's going to be fantastic to see a bunch of people, including this hour's guests. We always get to see each other, and I always look forward to that. And I know you're running around all over the place, and you're in and out, and you're back and forth, and you're over at Champions Gate and everything else, Doc. But Orlando is your home base, so you better be at the show.
Well, I will be at the show, but from the 18th through the 20th, we kick off at the Golf Zone Ledbetter. We're having the United States and the International Golf Coaches Summit there, you know, for 3 days at our new headquarters there at the Reunion Resort. And I am one of the keynote speakers. And, you know, we've got some really wonderful people, you know, on board. We have Trevor Anderson. We have, you know, Rick Sessinghouse, Dr. Izzy Justice. We have, you know, a lot of different people. At the end of 3 o'clock, I'm bringing it home. I am the final speaker for the day. And I'm going to talk about personal and professional growth. And, you know, one of the things I'm going to be talking about is, you know, everything, you know, the most important things I've learned in my last 25, 26 years, you know, with David Ledbetter and the Ledbetter organization and some of the different things, you know, that I've done there. But there's been, you know, 4 or 5 different things, you know, that I'm going to actually highlight. And one of them, I'm going to tell about the old story about, you know, an 86-year-old Fuller Brush salesman who, and I think I've talked about him before on this show many times. What I really learned from him, and what I learned from him was his grit, his perseverance, and that he was 86 years old. And I asked him when he was going to retire, and he says, "Hell, I'm not retiring. I'm just starting to get pretty good at this stuff. I've taken me all this many years to find out what's really worked and what doesn't, and I'm going to keep on going." So that's kind of really, you know, the philosophy that I'm going to be talking to all these unbelievable, great Ledbetter Golf Zone coaches.
Well, it's always great. I need to run into David. I usually do at the show, and I always say we're going to invite him back on. We need to get him back on the show, so that'll be great to see him. It's just so many people in Orlando under one roof, and it's certainly a PR extravaganza, well, if nothing else.
It's an overwhelming experience. If you've never been there before, I mean, it's all things golf. And if you're into golf, the software of golf, this not the computer software, I'm talking about the merchandise and the wonderful golf clothes. You know, that's the main thing I get, you know, kind of excited because I'm hardly ever on that side of, you know, the convention center. But if you start walking through this unbelievable, I mean, whether it's the Tommy Hilfigers or the Under Armour, or it's whoever it is, Polo, Ralph Lauren, and, you know, just Trevor Matthews and all of those. I mean, I'm sitting here going, wow, there are some beautiful, beautiful threads, beautiful outfits that people have. And I just get so jealous. I just wish I had, you know, 2 or 3 shopping carts that I could just throw everything in and say, wow, this has been a great day. Because it gets almost overwhelming, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. This soft goods area is, I got a couple people from the show that are going to be hanging out down there and trying to work on some story ideas and some guest invitations and stuff like that, because it's just, it's massive. It's over 1 million square feet. Mark Simon was on the show last week. He's the vice president and the man behind the curtain, as we like to call him, the wizard, who puts this helps put this show on. And it's a phenomenal thing. And I know that it's not open to the public, so we try to bring our listeners a little closer so they can get an idea of what happens back there and get a bit of information. But it is really something else. But we greatly look forward to seeing you and spending a little bit of time. I don't know. You go to all these symposiums. You have a big schedule ahead.
You know, pretty big. I'm pretty busy, you know, but I'm going to be there Wednesday and Thursday and probably Friday as well. It's funny, you know, once I get there, all right, it isn't like, okay, I'm going to do this and this and this and this. What happens is that I go in and I may have, you know, to be able to speak someplace, or somebody's got me coming in to talk to them, you know, and sort of help them market their product or whatever it is. But, you know, the other thing is I start seeing old friends. They start catching up. Next thing you know, they want me to see somebody. And before long, you know, the day is over. And I got to tell you, at the end of every day at 5 o'clock, you know, when the show, you know, closes down, people are waxed. People are bushed because you're walking all around. You don't realize how many miles you've walked and just the energy that flows. And that's what I love most about the show.
Dr. Bob Winters, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. We're just out of time. Get out there and practice your game. Practice. Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.